Good day, everyone, and welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange conference call. Today's call is being recorded. Now, for opening remarks and introductions, I'd like to turn the conference over to Mr. Shazam Chigani. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Jessica, and welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is WebSphere Commons Churning Methodology, Designing with Performance in Mind. If you have not yet joined the e-meeting, please do so now. The e-meeting URL is available on the WebSphere Technical Exchange site. Today's webcast will include a PowerPoint presentation. Once you're in the meeting, you'll see the presentation. We recommend that you view the presentation in full screen mode. To do this, go to the view in the toolbar at the top of your screen and select Make Shared Area Full Screen. If you're unable to access the e-meeting at this time, or if you'd like to download a copy of the presentation, please go to the WebSphere Technical Exchange site and click on today's presentation title. The document that displays will contain the PDF file. You may also access the presentation by going to any IBM.com site and typing the tech doc number 7010269 in the search box found at the very top of the page. Once again, that number is 7010269. This call is being recorded, so you can replay it at your convenience. Early next week, the MP3 file, along with the presentation, will be available on the previous webcast tab of the WebSphere Technical Exchange site. During the presentation, all lines will be muted. After the presentation, I will ask you to respond to a few quick polling questions. At the end of today's session, the lines will open for a question and answer period. Today's presenters are Ali and Mark. Ali Uzgar is the technical lead for the WebSphere Commerce Advanced Technical Services team. Ali's primary role on this team is to provide performance tuning expertise, and he has successfully led many projects through to completion. He has had a wealth of experience in all aspects of the performance tuning methodology and has had a strong relationship with the numerous WebSphere Commerce clients. Mark Kershaw is a WebSphere Commerce Level 2 support analyst. As a member of the WebSphere Commerce Level 2 support team, Mark is responsible for providing technical assistance to clients who use a WebSphere Commerce family of products, from installation and configuration to integration and performance. At this time, I'd like to turn the call over to Ali and Mark.
Thanks, Shazam. So my name is Mark Kershaw, and I'm here along with my colleague, Ali Uzgar. Designing with performance in mind, what is the methodology for this? This is what we're going to be looking at for today's presentation. Slide 2, please. There's a few objectives that we want to achieve today. Primarily, we want to get you thinking about performance all the time, right from the beginning of a project, right through to the launch, and all phases after that. So the methodology that we're going to look at isn't necessarily specific to commerce. It sort of can be extrapolated to other applications running on WebSphere Application Server, but obviously we're going to look at it from a WebSphere Commerce perspective. And there's different elements that we're going to look at. Primarily, we're going to start out by looking at some caching, some profiling, and also the performance tuning phase. And we're going to look at how you can incorporate this into all aspects of your project. And like most methodologies, the performance testing and tuning methodology is evolving, so we're going to have a look at where it's going to be going in the future. And really, like I said, the main objective here is to get you thinking about performance all the time. Slide 3, please. So let's just take a quick look at the agenda for today. We're going to start out by defining your test plan. We're going to look at caching design, application profiling, actions that come out of your application profiling and what you have to do, tuning and performance activities, and again, where is this methodology going? Slide 4, please. So let's jump right in. We'll start out with the first item on the agenda of defining the test plan. So there's three aspects that we've identified here, one of them being the hardware side of things. Secondly, we're going to look at how you define your expectations for the site, your workload mixes, your volumes. And thirdly, what are the non-functional requirements for the system? Slide 5, please. So let's start out by talking a little bit about hardware. Now, in order to successfully performance test your environment and test out all the different performance changes you're going to make, you need to have a performance testing environment set up that mimics your production environment. Now, ideally, you want to have an exact replica of your production environment for performance testing, but obviously this isn't always feasible due to financial constraints, etc. And so you can have, if you like, more of a scaled-down replica of your production environment. And that will really give you the results that you need. Now, there's different ways that you can determine sort of what sort of proportion your performance environment is of your production environment. You know, for example, one is RPerf, a few other methods out there. One of the key things you want to keep in mind is that your performance environment should definitely mimic the number of tiers that your production environment has. So, for example, if you've got remote database and remote web server on your production environment, make sure that the same applies to your performance environment. Now, there are a few different ways to determine how big your environment should be. There's sort of a standard commerce model that can be used for determining what your hardware requirements are. And obviously, any project of this scope is going to have a lot of research done in order to determine how big it needs to be. The key here is that you want to do this sooner rather than later. Now, of course, as your testing goes and as you're doing profiling and making changes, you're going to find that, well, maybe your initial findings weren't exactly correct and things are going to evolve a little bit. So the more testing that you do, you're going to be able to get a better picture of what your actual hardware sizing is going to be. Slide 6, please. One of the key aspects of doing a performance tuning and testing exercise is that you need to establish what your workload mix and volume is going to be. Now, we can't stress enough the importance of this because this is really the target that you're going to have to be at. So there's a few different ways to determine what these numbers need to be. Now, depending on whether this is a new commerce system or whether this is a migrated commerce system, there's a few different ways that you can gather this information. Now, one of the sort of most surefire ways to do this is to have a look at your web server logs. Now, you can take your web server logs, you can sort of write utilities to parse through them and see what kind of mixes you get. What are your number of guest users versus registered users? What's the average number of items in a shopping cart? What's your the rate of carts that are abandoned, what's the browse versus buy ratios. And there's also other tools out there that can help you do this. CoreMetrics is a very advanced tool that you can use. Google Analytics, also very common. And of course, the business side of your organization is also going to have input into this as well. Now, the other side of this is that you need to predict into the future what your volumes are going to be. So you can base your sizings on this particular year, but what's it going to be next year? What's it going to be the year after that? You know, what's the expected lifespan of the system, and are things going to continue growing over that lifespan? And, of course, you have to take into account your busiest time. What is going to be the peak hour on your busiest day of the year? If Christmas season is your busiest time, what's going to be the busiest day and the busiest hour of that season? And, of course, you need to document all this. Experience shows us that too many times this sort of information isn't documented and gets pushed aside. So make sure that this information gets defined early on in the process and is well documented. Slide 7. So, again, you know, validate all of the non-functional requirements. What are your expected response times? You know, is 2 seconds acceptable for a checkout flow? Is 3 seconds? Is 5 seconds? If you have some back-end inventory jobs running, for example, how is that going to affect things? What's your expected pages per second? How many orders per hour? All of these are different things that need to be defined. And again, the earlier the better, and get these things documented. Expected system utilization, also very important. One of the things that we often run into as being a problem is the use of the network. A lot of the times, the database will be well-tuned, the application code will be well-profiled, but then we'll run into a huge bottleneck because the network just doesn't have the bandwidth to accommodate the needs. And you definitely don't want to run into that situation. So make sure that these things are all looked at and looked at soon in the process so that you can get things fixed up. And again, get these well-defined right at the beginning of the project in the design phase. Slide number 8, please.
Before going to the next chart, if you cannot join the e-meeting, you can still access the presentation by going to ibm.com and typing 701-0269 in the search box at the very top of the page. A technical document, the PDF, will display. Thank you. I'll now return the call over to Ali and Mark.
Okay. And we're on to slide number 9, caching design. Mark made excellent comments on really what the performance approach is. I just wanted to stress on a couple of points. Is our holistic message here is performance is not an afterthought. It really has to be weaved in with your design and development process for you to really, A, understand what you're going to go live with, and B, then once you are in production, stay in a stable state. Right? Now, having said that, caching is by far the area where you'll get the most bang for your buck in terms of performance. Right? So, having said that, ensure that you have a caching design document in place right from when you thought that you're going to have an e-commerce implementation and you've decided your use case flows. Start writing up a cache design doc. Document how each functionality on your site fits into the caching architecture. Is it cacheable? If it is, to what level is it cacheable? What are the caching approaches that you will basically apply? So talking more to the slide itself, you have to lay out your cache system, which is to say, all right, so I intend on caching my e-commerce site. Am I going to be caching at my web server level? Am I going to be caching at my web server level? Or am I going to take it a step further, and am I even going to be edge caching, Akamai maybe, or the use of a caching proxy? Also, is there any data that I could cache at my database level? So you have to define all of those right from day one. Now, once you've kind of laid out what your caching design will be, there are other items that you do need to think about is how if you're running in a clustered environment, which really today is the norms, how do you intend on replicating that data? What is the cost of replicating that data? Is the cost of replicating the data greater than the actual value of the data itself? All of those factors have to be kept in mind. So you've now cached, and you also have an excellent replication mechanism. It's also very important that you constantly invalidate your cache. Prices will change on your site. Inventory statuses will change. Images for products may change. Your entire catalog may change. So you need to think about how you are going to get rid of that data. And the key point there is that you don't want your invalidation to be an overkill. You want to, right from get-go, be thinking about a fine-grained invalidation strategy where if just a product under a category changed, make sure you're not blowing the cache for the entire category away. And just, in fact, invalidating the product data itself. So that is extra work. It will take more thought and time, but trust me, it will pay off in the long run. You also want to, at a high level, identify work with your business and your technical architect and decide on what are the acceptable caching methods. So when we talk specifically about WebSphere and the dynamic caching framework underneath, you can cache your servlets, you can cache JSPs, you can cache objects, you can cache commands, you get cash registries. So it is for your business to decide what is going to be the most manageable fashion. When we're talking about the database, your business may identify for you at a high level some queries that it may need to fire on a regular basis. And if those queries are extensive, you may want your database architect to start thinking in lines of how could I cache on the database? Could I create an MQT in DB2 or a view or something to that effect, right? And then have it invalidated on, say, a trigger basis. You also need to document what your acceptable invalidation methods are. So WebSphere provides you with three APIs. There's a clear all, there's a clear by template, there's a clear by data. Are you going to be using those APIs to replicate, or are you going to go directly into the cache monitor, or are you going to take advantage of the cache invalidation schedule job and the schema that's really out of the box from Commerce, which is to say that you could have triggers at your database level that fire and make entries into this Commerce table called the cache IVL table, and then have a Commerce schedule job come in, pick those invalidations up, and fire the APIs for you. So really a well-oiled machine, kind of self-sufficient, if you will, in itself. I just want to reinforce that cash is not a bonus. It's a function to the site today. It really is critical. Ensure that at your macro design phase, when you are writing up the solution design document, make sure that each unit functionality on that design doc has a caching section for it. Force your architects to make decisions on how they're going to cache this proposed functionality. And with that, slide 10.
Okay. So Ali gave a good overview of the use of Dynacache in your project. The next main section that we're going to look at is profiling of your application. So even though you're going to maximize the use of cache, you still need to make sure that your code and your database use is as clean as possible. Slide 11, please. So we're going to have a look into the different methods that you can use in order to make sure that your code is as clean as possible. And again, the idea here is that we stress that the earlier that you do this, the better. If you are doing profiling right during the development phase, that is the ideal. You don't want to be in a situation where you develop and code your whole entire project, and then at the very end you have to go back and revisit every page, because that's where you're going to run into delays prior to launching. So developers need to learn this process, and they need to incorporate this into their coding practices. And really what we're going to show you can all be done within your WebSphere Commerce toolkit environment. So three high-level tactics. A, you want to look at your code. Look for looping, recursions, all that sort of thing. Second off, we want to do some SQL tracing. Let's have a look at your database access. Are there unnecessary queries? Are there queries that are happening over and over that don't need to be? And thirdly, verify the Dynacache implementation. So Ali talked about what needs to be cached and how to cache it. One of the activities of profiling is going to be verifying that the correct things are cached and that nothing sort of slipped through the cracks. Slide 12. So, like I said, the aim of the profiling, we want to have a look for inefficiencies in the code, rework the code, and this is going to be done by unit profiling your code to look for these inefficiencies and redundancies. Now, WebSphere Commerce comes with Rational Application Developer, which has a very good set of tools for profiling all of your Java code and has a bunch of different perspectives. So it's very useful and will really help you to pinpoint any changes that you need to make. Slide 13, please. So this slide has a bit of a diagram that might be a bit hard to see in the e-meeting, but you can go back and have a closer look when you get the PDF later on. But basically, we're just trying to show how is your environment going to be set up. Basically, you're going to have your remote agent controller for RAD on your app server, which in a development environment is just going to be your toolkit machine. You're going to attach Commerce to RAD. RAD can hook up to that exact PID. And then you're going to do your profiling and do your analysis. And you can look for different things, you know, memory usage, look for leaks, analysis of the actual performance, all that sort of thing. Slide 14. These next two slides just give some high-level instructions for how you actually do the profiling. Now, we're not going to go into the details here because the purpose of this presentation is meant to be a look at the methodology, so you can go and look at these instructions later on, but essentially all you're doing is you're attaching your code into RAD, and then you can filter out by various different packages, for example, com.ibm.commerce. If you've got custom code packages, make sure your filtering takes that into account. If you've got a package such as com.ibm.commerce.customername, hit play, and then away you go. You can start your profiling. So if we go to slide 15, please, you can look at an example of profiling of the product display page. Once you've hit that page, you can detach from the agent controller, save that profile, and then go ahead and begin your analysis. So again, these are all instructions that you can go back to, and once you start playing around with RAD, you'll get a bit more familiar with this. Slide 16. So we want to take a look at some of the reports that RAD offers. Now, it offers a whole bunch of different reports. The one that we usually start using right off the bat is the execution flow report. As you start playing around with RAD, you'll find different reports that you'll like to use, but really the execution flow will give you a good overview of what needs to be done. And some reports require different things. Some of the reports you're going to have to take heap jumps and that sort of thing in order to get the full benefit of the report. Slide 17, please. Now, the use of RAD, when you're looking at the execution flow, it will allow you to examine all the different threads against a particular timeline. Now, the execution flow is similar to what you would be looking at if you're familiar with the GinSight tool. This basically gives you the same options as GinSight, so if you're familiar with that, you can use that same view right from within RAD. Now, the example that we have, the diagram that we have on the slide, you're looking downwards in terms of time, and as you hover over the different colored bars, this will give you the exact name of the class and method that is being used. So the particular section we've highlighted here is from some of the Commerce out-of-the-box code, which shows you the e-marketing spot method from the previous page where we did the product display profiling. So what you can see here, from the entire time that this page took to load, over 50% of the time is taken up doing the populating of that e-marketing spot. So our development team, when they wrote this, obviously went in and did profiling and determined that all of the code in there was necessary. Now, when you're doing your own code, if you were to see a particular method like this taking up over 50% of the time, you would want to go in and have a look in there to see, is there functions that are being called numerous times? And if so, is this a function that could be just called one time and then, for example, have the result of that function stored in some sort of variable? Again, is there unnecessary recursion or looping happening? Are you looping over a whole bunch of variables when you only need to look at one? Maybe that's something you could check out. So the execution flow is just a good start into profiling to give you a high-level view as to what is happening on a particular page. Slide 18, please. This slide shows you how to use the method details report in conjunction with the execution flow report. So this is how you can find out what your most what your most expensive methods are. So it gives it in a nice pie chart format. You can figure out easily, okay, in this particular case, again, emarketingspot.populate is the one that is taking the most amount of time. So again, once you've got this, you can go in, start doing your analysis, look for the looping, look for the recursions. Slide 19, please. So a bit more information about this. When you have the method details report, a useful function that you can do here is look up and down in the stack, in the call stack, to see how your different methods are interacting with each other. Where is a particular function call originating? All these things are going to help you to determine where, what section of your code you need to look at in order to get rid of those redundancies. And again, many other views that you can tie in here as you become more familiar with RAD. Method statistics, class statistics reports all show you how many times a method was called, how many times a class was called, how long did these things take, where's the most expensive section of code. All very useful utilities to help you narrow down where your bottlenecks are. Slide 20. So that gives us an overview of how to make improvements to your actual code. The next part that we want to look at is how to improve your database access. Now, experience shows us that basically the length of time that a page takes to load is really directly proportional to the database access that it does. So if we can knock out the number of queries or improve on the queries that a particular page is calling, you're going to save all kinds of time. So really, we're looking here for slow-performing SQLs. A high number of executions of SQLs is a specific query being executed a high number of times. And also, we want to look at things like sort time. Are there lots of rows read and written? You know, do we need new index? Do we need new indexes introduced, for example? And DB2, Oracle, and CloudScape all offer ways in to do this. Slide 21. So here we give just a brief example of a real-life situation where we worked with a customer, and when we did some SQL tracing, we found that just adding a single item into a shopping cart required over 3,700 SQLs to be fired. So as soon as we saw this, this was sort of an immediate red flag to us to say, well, how come a simple add-to-cart scenario required so many SQLs to be fired? And we went in and we did some SQL tracing and found that just three of these queries took up about 3,000 of those SQL statements. And it turned out that in this particular case that there was a known commerce fix for this that we applied. In some cases, you're going to need to go in and modify your code to avoid a situation like this. But the end result is that in this particular scenario is that the capacity for orders basically doubled just from a simple fix. And your response times had huge improvements. We went from pushing 10 seconds down to around 2 to 3 seconds. So in a situation like this, the benefit was obvious, and the results that we found from the SQL tracing is something that we never would have discovered if we hadn't gone in and done that SQL tracing. Slide 22. So in here, again, we're not going to look through this in too much detail because this is just instructions if you're using DB2 on how to actually do the SQL profiling, but basically the tool here is going to be event monitors. So essentially you create a temp directory to store the information, you create your event monitor, you start your event monitor, and then hit those pages that you're wanting to profile, stop the event monitor, format the event monitor, and then do your analysis. So if you're not familiar with event monitors, this is something that you can go and play around with. We won't go into too many more details here since we want to stick with a high-level methodology. Slide 23, same thing for Oracle. Here are the instructions. You create your alter your session to start the SQL tracing, hit the profile page, stop the session. Slide 24, same thing for CloudScape. Now, the SQL tracing you can do in both a lightweight and a full-weight test environment. For your application profiling, really we recommend doing that in the full test environment just because your light environment uses a different container. And the next part of profiling, if we look at slide 25, you want to go ahead and you want to verify that the caching that you've implemented, that Ali discussed, is actually performing correctly. So profiling will allow you to make sure that what you intend to be cached actually is being cached. And if we go to slide 26, this will actually give us the steps for doing this, which is basically you want to clear your cache and then access the page once to make sure that your cache is populated, and then you want to access the page a second time once collecting SQL tracing and application profiling data, and that way you'll be able to see exactly what SQLs are fired when you're accessing the cache page, and you'll be able to see what application code actually makes or actually is getting fired. And the idea here is that you make sure that nothing slips through the cracks from when you were implementing Dynacache. Basically, you're verifying that Dynacache implementation. And obviously, if your results aren't what you expect, then you need to go back and revisit that Dynacache implementation. So on to slide 27. Obviously, once you've done your profiling, you're going to have some actions coming out of that profiling. And if we look at slide 28, what we've started to do here is split this out into tasks that your architects, your developers, and your DBAs need to look at. So your architects are really looking at the system from a higher level. Is there a way that we can improve the flow? If we're fetching contract prices, for example, how can we better do this? Is there a way that we can cache this more cleanly? Pagination, searching. We know that searching is one of the most intensive activities. How can we improve on the time for this? Your developers need to go in and look at the code. We've stressed before. Let's try and get rid of recursion. Let's see if there's excessive looping. Is there redundant fetching of objects? Or are we hitting the database too many times? These are all tasks that your developers need to go in. And these are all things that should be done during the development phase. Don't wait until the end of the project to go back and look to see how the code could be improved. Whenever you're developing a page, start doing your profiling at that time. Slide 29. This shows us what DBAs have to do. DBAs can easily go in. They're familiar with the database tools. They can go in and they can find SQLs that are hammering the system. Is there a SQL that is doing sort overflows, that is reading or writing too many rows? They can suggest indexes. They can identify bottlenecks and suggest improvements to your buffer pools, your package caches, and so on. They can find SQLs that need to be parameterized, for example. If you have a lot of SQLs that aren't being parameterized, your package cache is quickly going to be exhausted. So these are all tasks that your DBAs need to look into. So these slides have really given a good overview of looking at the actual level of your application code. Where can things be improved and where can database accesses be reduced? So we'll go on to slide 30 now, and I'll turn it back over to Ali.
Okay, tuning and performance activities. When we talk about the performance tuning methodology, the performance tuning methodology is everything that Mark mentioned, and then in addition, there is the load testing piece of it. Earlier on in the presentation, we touched on a performance environment concept, and I'll be talking a bit more about that. So in this section, we will talk about the performance environment. We will talk about your load scripts. We'll talk about how to fire your load scripts, and also what data to capture when these scripts are being executed, and how a certain analysis has to be done on your results. And then really, this is an iterative process until you meet targets. So, slide 31. So we're talking about the performance environment. The performance environment is really an environment parallel to your production environment. May not be a replica, but has to be a representation. When I say representation, I want to be absolutely clear, isn't that if you have a three-tier system on your production, make sure you have a three-tier system on your performance environment also. if the capacity of your database is twice the capacity of your application server on your production, make sure that that ratio holds in the performance environment. So you've now set up the machines and you've installed Commerce and your performance environment is all functional. There are a set of initial parameters that we'd like to start with. So my point here is that do not start with out of the box. So parameters such as server thread counts, really your data source connection pools, your TCP/IP settings at an operating system level, buffer pools at your database level, etc. Start with a point that's not out of the box, and then depending on your results, you can tune up or down. I will try and later on attach a sample document that lists all the critical parameters. I will put it up on DeveloperWorks. So keep watching for that. Slide 32. So the purpose of load testing is to accurately subject your site to the kind of traffic that you will see in production. Now, the key here is that this load has to be as close to the real traffic that you can see. Otherwise, it's really futile, and you just won't know how your system will react. Commerce site implementations are extremely sensitive to your shopping ratios. For example, your add-to-cart ratio, your conversion ratios, your remove-from-cart ratios. Hence, it's extremely important to get these ratios right. And Mark had mentioned earlier where you have to talk to your business, you have to look at your web server logs, look at core metrics, and document them so that, end of the day, you can always go back to them in your NFR document. So identify the main usage scenarios, identify the mix and the variations of those scenarios, and what kind of workload is associated to each scenario. All right. Moving on to slide 33. So you've now kind of quasi-designed your load tests. It's time to subject your site to those tests. So fire your tests. You have to capture measurements. Now, the three critical measurements or the three bottom-line results that you are looking at are: what is your average server response time, which you're probably going to extract at a web server level? What is your average round-trip response time? So from the time the browser sent the request to the time the browser got a response, that is also key because it accounts for costs on your network delays, etc. You want to make sure that you're not all over the map in terms of response times. To say the standard deviation is within reason. So now you'll have to rerun your tests and continue running them until you meet or exceed your performance goals. Then we're going to talk about that a bit more. On to slide 34. Work with several clients, and on every single engagement, the biggest challenge is accurately representing your workload. I've seen pages after pages after pages of this is what our traffic will look like. And it's always a challenge for anyone to get a complete handle on it. So we've come up with a quick Visio flow chart. Consider this a template. Add or remove boxes from it depending on your custom flow. But this template will basically, once filled out, give you a true representation of what your workload mix is. Right? Right from your users to your add to cart to your checkouts and your searches. Okay, you may have more than one of these documents. Mark has spoken a bit about peak days and peak hours. a lot of clients may have multiple peaks a year, and each peak may be of a different consistency, if you will. So your summer peak is going to be different from your spring peak, from your fall peak. So you may have multiple of these templates. Slide 35. Just a quick picture here of how you would typically conduct load testing. So the way we do it is we keep the load testing tool controllers close to the performance experts, while the actual load firing injectors are put as close to the environment as possible. That way, what you're doing is you're eliminating any network issues and costs that you may see. Today, given that e-commerce volumes are rising at an alarming rate, it's just increasingly impossible to, from a single point, be able to, over the internet, completely stress your site. Hence, the actual load injectors, I would say, place them on the same VLAN as your front-facing firewall or your web servers if you don't have a firewall, right? Make sure that the controllers and the injectors can communicate in terms of how the injectors are doing, etc. But fire your load from as close as possible. Slide 36. Load test data published. So when I talk about test data published, a common mistake is that customers will get their mix and their scenarios right and will do all the right things to fire their script. What is often missed is that is your performance environment from a data set standpoint representative of what production will be, say, 4 or 5 months into production? Does it have the depth and breadth of, say, your catalog? Does it have populated users? So the users to the magnitude of what you would have once you are in production? Does it have sample orders in the system? Because when the size of these tables change, your SQL access plans change, their costs change, and as Mark had mentioned, the cost of e-commerce implementation is directly proportional to the cost of your SQLs. So you want to make sure that you get all of that data as accurately onto the performance environment as possible. Now, if you're following this methodology and you're doing the repetitive iterative tests, you want to make sure that you also have a way of coming back to a baseline database. So once you've populated the database with what you think is a representation of production, then make sure between every test you can roll back to that copy of the database. Otherwise, you will see regression in your numbers either way. Slide 37. So a bit more about load test execution. For a typical commerce-type implementation, we have three main scripts. There is the browse script that is going to hit your home page, and it's going to look at your product displays, your category displays. There's going to be a searching script, and there's going to be an order tunnel script, which will add to cart, create orders, update orders, cancel orders, completely check them out. You want to make sure that you are covering the entire spectrum of your functionality. In a lot of cases, what we've also done is we've added a fourth script that we call the URL hitter. Based on what you analyze from your access logs, there may be a separate category of URLs that you can't fit in browsing, searching, or create. I would just dump them in that URL hitter file and fire them in the appropriate ratios. Now, to comprehensively exercise your site from a performance and stability standpoint, you need to, A, establish your peak volume baseline results. So when we say peak, it could be several peaks, right? It could be your summer peak and your winter peak. Another test that a lot of customers miss are the soak tests. You want to make sure that you stress the system for an extended period of time. This will basically flush out stability issues, issues in, say, your memory footprint, or you may even have memory leaks, or you may have degradation from a database standpoint where your statistics are going out of sync very quickly, so you want to hash those out. I typically start off with a 24 and then a 48-hour test. You want to make sure that you subject your performance environment to what I'd like to call performance tests. So we spoke about the NFR document earlier on, where the business has to document and sign off what are going to be the other activities on the site. They're going to be scheduled email campaigns. How often are your inventory and price updates going to be? How often are you going to invalidate your cache? So you want to make sure that alongside your regular baseline peak load, you also fire these aspects. So you schedule email campaigns and you publish some of your data and you constantly invalidate some of your cache. So how do these in a certain mix hold up, really? On to slide 38. Here I'm talking more about how are you going to document your test results. So you run your tests and you're meeting targets or not. You have to have a good way of documenting this. I will quickly move on to the next slide, which is a bit more detailed on the same subject. So on to slide 39, please. Here is a spreadsheet. My opinion, this spreadsheet gives you the key measurements of a load test result. So if you notice, I have a title, which is testing for this particular peak. It will give you how many transactions a second by your script. It will then tell you how many pages a second you did, how many orders an hour you did, what your conversion ratios were, what your constants were, what your server utilizations were. Also, a key point is your business has to decide how hot you want your hardware to be running. Do you want to be at 75% utilization at peak? Could you never want to go beyond 50? Or are you okay with running at 90%? What is your no-go zone? And then I will take the most important URLs and I will publish their response times and their standard deviation. On to slide 40. So once you receive your first set of results, you may need to retune on how close you are to your target. The typical sequence of activities is that you profile and analyze the application based on your profiling findings. You will tune code. You will run your load test. You might hit your target. If not, you retune. You run your tests again. Steps 4 and 5 are repeated until targets are met. The one very important point here is that you constantly keep track of changes made to the system at each step. On to slide 41. So we spoke about the methodology for participants who have worked with commerce. I have a few typical performance gotchas in commerce, right? Well, the first one is the view all functionality. A lot of times on sites, you will see that if you're under a specific category and that category is showing products and everything's paginated, but you will have page 1, 2, 3, 4, and then there will be a link called view all. When you click that view all and you pull up 500 products, that changes the entire dynamics of your site. It changes the size of your cache objects. It changes the memory footprint of your heap. It changes your data replication costs. So you want to be very, very careful there, right? You may think that you do not have categories that have more than 50 objects, 50 products, but lo and behold, your business wants this new spring catalog that has a category that's a sale category, for example, and you've got 600, 700, and I'm not just making numbers up. This is first-hand experience, and I've seen it take sites down. Another gotcha is that customers will think that they've covered their site, but there are some key functionalities at times that are kind of implicit and may get missed out. Remove from cart is one of them. I found that no one ever thinks of remove from cart, but the fact is that browsers out there will remove from cart. They will add a pair of shoes, and they will remove it for some reason, but it happens more often than we think. Okay. Not going to go into deep details of sales categories and pagination. Really, I spoke to it under the view all. On to slide 42, and back to Mark.
Okay, so one of the things that we mentioned back at the beginning is that, you know, this performance tuning methodology continues to evolve like most things. And really what one of our goals is by giving this presentation is we want to enable you, the customer, to become an active participant in the performance tuning process and to become more self-sufficient. And really the idea is that we get you thinking about performance right from the get-go of a project. So if we go on to slide 43, please, we can look into a few details of this. So you'll notice at the top there, the keyword we've got in place is reuse. We don't want to be reinventing the wheel every single time, so reuse your caching designs, your performance testing documents, you know, your development methods for performance. Get these methodologies documented and reuse them. And like I say, start thinking of performance right from when the project begins, from your design phase through development, right through to the launch phase. And the reality of this is if you don't think about it from the beginning, you're going to end up on our CRISPIT list. We see this time and time again where performance is left as an afterthought and the results are definitely less than positive. And education is the way that we're moving. You know, it's the old phrase where you give a man a fish and he'll eat for a day, and if you teach him to fish, he'll eat forever. So that brings us through to our summary. Let's go to slide 44 and wrap things up here. There's a few key points that we touched on. Understand the requirements, and don't just understand them, but get them documented. Understand them as soon as possible and get them documented as soon as possible. And again, caching, profiling, Dynacache implementation needs to be done, should be done right at the development phase of the project. Don't go through your whole entire project and then 2 or 3 weeks before launch start doing performance testing, because that's where you're going to run into delays. Start doing this right from the beginning. Whenever you develop a new page, figure out what can be improved on the page, what database accesses can be removed. And sure, performance tuning is time-consuming. You know, no one said that this is something that you can do in an afternoon, but if you don't do it at the beginning of the project, you'll find that you end up spending a lot more time and money on it towards the end of the project. So really, the key message here is that performance, it's not an afterthought. It's just as important as the design and the development and testing phases. You need to do this right from the beginning of the project. So if we look at slide 45, we've got a few important resources listed here. We've listed a couple of Red Books, Developer Works articles. These are all things that, you know, we recommend you go and have a look at on your own time. It'll help you to understand Dynacache better, how you can improve your Dynacache implementation, how you can set up your clusters to perform better. We won't go into many details about these, but these are all things that you can go and look at on your own time. Slide 46. This particular chart has links to a number of sites that provide valuable online resources for all WebSphere products. DeveloperWorks offers in-depth technical information. The events link that we've got on the support pages points you to the webcast and conference information, and if you go to WebSphere.org, you can find out more about user group info and more product info. The IBM Education Assistant consists of many self-help modules to get new users up the learning curve more quickly. And the ESR tool that's mentioned is so that Passport Advantage clients can open, update, and view all their PMRs online. And finally, the My Support link on all of our product support pages lets you sign up for weekly email updates for products that may be of interest to you. So now I'll turn it back over to Shazen.
Thank you. The question and answer session will be conducted electronically. If you would like to ask a question, please do so by pressing the star key followed by the digit 1 on your touch-tone telephone. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, that is star 1 on your touch-tone telephone. We will pause for just a moment. And there are no questions at this time. However, I would like to give everyone one final opportunity. That is star 1 on your touch tone telephone. We will pause for one more moment. And there are no questions at this time. I'd like to turn the conference back over to you, Mr. Shigani, for any additional or closing remarks.
At this time, we will conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation. We hope you will join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. Remember, our replay of today's presentation will also be available on this site in the next day or two. Thanks very much for joining us today. And thank you, Mark and Ali, for presenting today.
This concludes today's presentation. Thank you for your participation, and have a wonderful day.